Early in the morning of Thursday, June 18th, NPR News reported the following.
Police in Charleston, South Carolina are confirming 9 deaths from a shooting at a historic black church. As Georgia Public Broadcasting's Sarah McCammon reports, authorities say the suspect is still on the loose.
Police say 8 people died on the scene.
The events in Charleston, South Carolina are all too reminiscent of church bombings and other attacks during the 1960s. On this week's Eastern Standard, what does the Charleston church shooting mean for us? We're interested in hearing from you. We have guests in the studio to discuss the topic, but your questions, your comments, and your personal stories are more than welcome at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest. Post on the WEKU Facebook page. In a little while, we'll open the phones as well. What does the Charleston church shooting mean for us? It's time for Eastern Standard, right after news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Last Thursday morning, June 18th, 2:39 in the morning, the following news report came through from the Associated Press. It says, police in Charleston, South Carolina are looking for a gunman who opened fire in a downtown historic black church, killing 9 people. Authorities are calling the shooting a hate crime. The gunman, described as a white man in his early 20s, walked into Emmanuel AME Church Wednesday night during a prayer service. Charleston Mayor Joseph Riley says the only reason that someone could walk into a church and shoot people praying is out of hate. And the Associated Press followed up with another news headline. Soon after Wednesday night's deadly shooting at a historic black church in Charleston, a group of pastors huddled together praying in a circle across the street. Community organizer Christopher Kaysen said he felt certain the shootings were racially motivated. He says, I am very tired of people telling me that I don't have the right to be angry. Kaysen said, I am very angry right now. On this week's Eastern Standard, we are discussing the Charleston, South Carolina church shooting. What does it mean for us in central and southeastern Kentucky? And with me in the studio this morning are some guests who will help us discuss this topic. First up, Dr. Jimmy Kirby, who has a doctorate of theology. Dr. Kirby received his doctorate from the Boston University School of Theology. He's a scholar focusing on Christian education and social ethics and an expert on Martin Luther King. Dr. Jimmy Kirby, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Pastor Marcia Moores Charles. After a 20-year career in accounting and human resources, Marcia answered a call to ministry. It was ordained on June 27th of 2010. Pastor Marcia has dual ministerial standing with the Christian Church Disciples of Christ and the United Church of Christ. She's the pastor of Bluegrass United Church of Christ in Lexington. And a disclaimer, by the way, I'm a member of Pastor Marcia's church. Our listeners should know that up front at all times, because that is an important factor in, I'm sure, in our conversation. Pastor Marcia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us, Senator Reginald Reggie Thomas, an attorney and law professor, a degree from Dartmouth College, a doctorate of law from Harvard Law School, first elected to the Kentucky Senate in a special election December 10th, 2013, representing Senate District 13, Fayette County. Senator Reggie Thomas, thank you so much for being with us.
John, thank you for having me.
Before we speak with our guests, let's go to the President of the United States. In comments that were widely publicized this week, President Obama spoke with comedian Mark Maron on the podcast that the comedian does out of his garage. The interview has gotten a lot of broadcast play, including on public radio's Fresh Air. The president reiterated something that he and others have said before, namely that there is a lot of work to be done.
Do not say that nothing's changed when it comes to race in America, unless you lived through being a black man in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Or 60s, mm-hmm. or 70s. Mm-hmm. It is incontrovertible that race relations have improved significantly during my lifetime and yours, mm-hmm. and that opportunities have opened up and that attitudes have changed.
Yeah.
That is a fact.
Right.
What is also true is that the legacy of slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination, in almost every institution of our lives, you know, that casts a long shadow. And that's still part of our DNA. That's passed on. We're not cured of it.
Racism.
We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. Societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior. And so what I tried to describe in the Selma speech that I gave commemorating the march there was, again, a notion that progress is real,
mm-hmm.
and we have to take hope from that progress. But what is also real is that the march isn't over, and the work is not yet completed.
The work is not yet completed, says President Barack Obama. On this week's Eastern Standard, we're discussing racism, the Charleston church shooting, what does it mean to us? And Pastor Marcia Morris Charles, as I disclaimed earlier, I'm a member of Pastor Marcia's church. And this past Sunday, Pastor Marcia gave a very stirring sermon in which she made some comments about the Charleston situation and focused on the fact that some people are denying the existence of racism. And before we turn to a couple of gentlemen who actually fit the demographic of the president was referring to, people who've lived through, black men who've lived through at least the 70s, maybe, 60s, those who are able to speak of that experience in this country. Pastor Marcia, talk just very briefly about your concerns about the denial of racism.
Well, my concerns are that, and I'm speaking from a perspective of a white woman raised in Eastern Kentucky, brought up in a house where I had black friends who regularly ate with us and et cetera. But my concern is, John, that so often because we don't want to admit that there is a degree of racism in all of us, we deny that there's any racism. And from my opinion, that's really not the truth. The truth is that even though I pride myself on being inclusive in any number of ways, society has conditioned me in some ways to have racism. And I need to acknowledge that and be honest about that and talk to people about that both privately and publicly for what I believe from a spiritual standpoint comes from Psalms 51 is unless we admit our transgressions and acknowledge them, then we can't learn from them, grow from them, and get better from them. And so I think we have to be honest in admitting that racism is alive and well. And I agree with our president that we've made some strides in racism and in other isms of our society. But that said, we have a ways to go, and we need to admit that.
At the core of so many issues, psychology or Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12-step programs, admitting that there is an issue before we can solve it. Let me turn to our guest first, Dr. Jimmy Kirby, as an expert on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Your experience, your observations about the role of racism in American society today and, of course, specifically focused on this horrible shooting of last week.
Yeah, let me first say that I agree totally with President Obama. I think he really hit the nail on the head there. As a product of the 50s and turbulent 60s, I can see and I can say that the major difference between racism then and racism now is during the 50s and 60s, racism was very overt. It was something that you could actually put your hands on, so you could attack it. Because you could see it. It was in your face. Today, racism still exists. However, it's very covert. It's hard for you to put your hands on. It's systemic. It's in the system. It's in the institutions. It's still there and alive and well, but it's just very difficult to root out. Whereas during my era, it was more covert. And you could actually attack it and try to root it out. But today, it's very difficult to even. And so that's why I think that many whites and many blacks deny that racism even exists today, but it is there.
One of the things I hope we'll do during the course of this program is turn to you for an answer to how would Martin Luther King Jr. respond to last week's shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. But let me turn first to Senator Reggie Thomas, an African-American, a native Kentuckian.
I can't say I'm a native because I was born in Chicago, but I'm definitely a Kentuckian. I grew up in Lexington since I was a teenager, and both my parents are Kentuckians.
Let's talk about the role. We talk about institutions and racism. As a member of the Kentucky Senate, the Kentucky General Assembly, your perception of racism and institutions in our country?
Well, I would certainly agree with Pastor Marsh and Dr. Kirby. I think racism does exist. I think it's very real. I think that it's important to recognize that we are all a product of America and that racism infiltrates this society. We are still a race-conscious society, and that we have to be intentional in trying to overcome it. I think one of the key elements that has to come out of this Charleston situation is that we need to have a national dialogue on race, a real, honest dialogue about race, and certainly here in Kentucky, and certainly in my hometown of Lexington. And I think that from that dialogue, we really need to begin to make some changes in how we deal with race here in America. The fact of the matter is this, John. Our society is becoming more and more pluralistic when we talk about ethnicities. We really are becoming an America that has different languages, where you have different ethnic groups, that in large numbers. I think a byproduct of what you saw in Charleston is that you have a lot of fear. You do have some whites who are fearful of this change, who feel uncomfortable with this change. And you see that manifested, unfortunately, with what happened in Charleston. I mean, all you have to do is read Dylann Roof's manifesto, and that's very clear that he reacted out of fear and out of discomfort this change is coming.
One of the things I'd like to ask all of you and our listeners as well is what are the components of this honest dialogue on racism? We've had a dialogue of sorts on racism, certainly since the Civil Rights Movement, certainly since the Jim Crow era, certainly since the Civil War. And we may not have time to address that question before we take a station break here right now, but I'd like everyone to think about what could happen in an honest dialogue on race that is not currently happening. Are we having a dishonest dialogue or communication on such matters right now? We want to invite our listeners to be part of the show. Of course, we're going to talk more with our guests, Dr. Jimmy Kirby, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles, and Senator Reggie Thomas. We'd be glad to hear from you by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call at 800-621-8890. It will be a few minutes before we actually put a phone caller on the air, but we'd love to hear your voice and include you in a rational and honest discussion of racism and the meaning of the Charleston church shootings for us in central and southeastern Kentucky. 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. A horrible shooting at a church, a historic black church in Charleston, South Carolina, last week has refired perhaps the discussion about racism in this country, and that's where we are going with this week's program with Dr. Jimmy Kirby, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles, and Senator Reggie Thomas. We're glad to hear from you at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or 800-621-8890. And let me pick up with our guests that topic, that question I was tossing out a few moments ago, that issue of an honest dialogue on racism. What would that look like? What would be different about that than other conversations we're having? Does it involve yelling, raising our voices, getting upset, openly admitting our emotions and our fears? And our
John, let me respond to that first, because I would be very interested, particularly in Pastor Marsh's response, because I've thought a lot about this in the last week. And I want to speak specifically about my hometown, our hometown, Marsh, of Lexington, but it could apply to any community in Kentucky. I think that this dialogue initially must be faith-driven. Because if these reactions that we've seen come out of hate, then I think the answer has to be found in love and in faith. And what I would like to see is the faith community in Lexington, the Baptists, both black and white, Methodists, both United Methodists and AME Church, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Catholics, the people of the Jewish faith and Islam faith, begin coming together and formulating a presentation of how we deal with racism that's prevalent in Fayette County. And by putting together such a dialogue, such a conference, certainly I would want them to bring in the business community and the education community and the medical community. But I would like to see it led by the faith community, because the fact of the matter, John, and we say this all the time, the most segregated hour in America is the 11 a.m. hour on Sunday. You know, when people go to worship a God, a God who sees us all the same, you know, as part of the human race, not a black, white, brown, or whatever. You know, a God who talks about, you know, us being brothers and sisters, and yet we're very segregated ethnically at that time. So I'd be interested in your position, Pastor Marsha, of having this dialogue led in Lexington, started by the faith community.
Well, certainly I believe that the faith community has a key role to play in this. And I would say one of the challenges of that is that we first got to get faith communities across faith traditions talking to one another, and even within the Protestant Christian denomination talking to one another, because you're right, it is the most segregated hour. And in our church, we talk a lot about interfaith relations and the fact of we spend so much time arguing about who is right and who is wrong and who has a monopoly on the definition of who and what God might be, that we oftentimes can't even welcome our Jewish and Muslim brothers and sisters and those of other faith traditions. So I think when we bring together the faith family to address this issue of hate and of misunderstanding, of intolerance with one another, we start with tolerance of one another in our churches and in our faith traditions, our synagogues and our mosques. And then I think we do expand it, but I certainly believe that the faith community has a key role, because, let's be honest, it is not easy to look at ourselves, is it? It is sometimes a difficult thing to acknowledge within us those prejudices or discriminations, but that is what we as faith and spiritual leaders try to guide our communities in doing, to take that honest look, to hold the mirror up to ourselves, and to admit those things perhaps first privately, then to acknowledge them publicly, and then it doesn't stop there to get to work with action. And so I do think that faith and spiritual leaders have some work to do to get this done.
Dr. Jimmy Kirby, wasn't the faith community at the core of the civil rights movement and the movement of Dr. Martin Luther King?
Yes, definitely. Particularly Southern churches, Southern black churches. But let me just say this. I think dialogue is certainly important. However, we've had dialogue. We've tried that, I think, on numerous occasions. I think the key is in education. Education. We have institutions to bring about this type of education, to change the moral climate in this society. And these institutions are churches. There are churches everywhere. Churches need to be educating and teaching about this. King often asked the question when he drove by white churches, what are you teaching and preaching in your churches? So it's about education for me. Dialogue is important, yes, but it's about education. Quite frankly, I don't see enough education going on in the churches about this, both black and white churches. And dialogue only goes so far, but it has to be education in order to change the moral climate in which we are living today.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. You can call us, 800-621-8890, to be part of our dialogue during this week's program. We hope to have a rational and honest conversation about race and the shooting in Charleston last week. 800-621-8890. Part of our research for this program, one of our producers spoke with author David Niosi, a member of the board of the American Humanist Association. We talk about the faith community and the role of faith and religion. And I don't think we're going to have time to actually play a piece of that interview with Mr. Niosi, but he makes the claim that we don't need religion, we don't need God, we don't need a supreme being involved in discussing these issues. He does agree, Dr. Kirby, with you on the issue of education, that he basically says that racism, a major factor in racism, is anti-intellectualism and ignorance.
Yes.
Your reactions?
Well, I mean, the only way you can really get at this issue is to change the attitudes of the people. And that comes through education. We King would say it takes both legislation and education. We have legislation, but we don't have the education. There are laws on the books saying that you cannot discriminate, even though it's still happening. But now I think it's about education. We need to change the attitudes of the people in order to change the moral climate of this society.
How do we approach those who do not have a faith in a supreme being in God?
Well, I was going to comment that we better be figuring that out, because the latest Pew research shows that it's about a 50-50 split to folks who believe that religion and church is even relevant anymore in their life. And my belief in that is because the church has sustained years of hypocrisy in the many isms of our society. And so for many folks, they're not going to look to church for that education. So I think that the folks that are in our churches and our synagogues and our mosques are folks that we can reach. But we better figure out how to reach those who aren't in there, because I don't think we'll have a change in the moral climate of our country until we reach way beyond that. And I think that's when we have to pull in our community leaders.
Well, I still stand by my initial position. I think to change people's morality in this area of racism, it starts with the faith leaders. It has to be faith-based. I guess, John, my initial reaction to Dr. Niosi's point is that you have intellectuals. I mean, however you want to define intellectuals, you've had people who have doctoral degrees, you know, who've written extensively, who preach racism, who've talked about, you know, differences between blacks and whites, and how blacks somehow are intellectually inferior. I mean, you've had these intellectuals talk about that. So I have a hard time saying that people who have degrees or who have who've written extensively, you know, cannot be racist, because I think
it's history, not about the credentials.
Yeah. History points that's not the case.
Eastern Standard is our program. You can write to us, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890, the Charleston church shooting and its meaning for us in Kentucky, and racism in our country, in our state of Kentucky. Here's an email that we received actually before the program from Beatrice of Richmond. And Beatrice writes, "First, thanks for having this show. I hope it leads to many more conversations. I would like to see every candidate for every political office given a list of questions regarding issues, not just racial, but of all nature, and they have to answer them yes or no. I am so tired of the wishy-washy responses we get." Beatrice says, "I'm a New Yorker by birth, became an adult during civil rights. Therefore, I saw racism in a slightly different light in the North than in the South. I raised my children in Annapolis, Maryland, right after they had integrated schools and began to get a better feeling for what is the, quote, Southern attitude. We then moved to Madison County 10 years, and I was active and vocal in my desire to have Obama elected president. Unfortunately, I've gotten a real dose of what intelligent, educated people, by all means, not all, have felt about black people and their places in society. it isn't a pretty picture. We desperately need to have open, honest discussions, and people have got to start standing behind what they think. If you can't be honest, then we as a country are in trouble. If some of these issues are not resolved, there are going to be serious consequences to happen, like more of what happened during the civil rights days. Finish up with what Beatrice wrote. She says, as I told an African-American friend of mine, as a white female, I can't begin to get into the soul of a black female and fully understand what is going on. However, as a human being, I can, will, and am enraged at what one human or humans can do to other humans. Thank you, Beatrice, for writing to us. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Our guests in the studio, Dr. Jimmy Kirby, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles, and Senator Reggie Thomas. Part of this discussion about Charleston, so much of it actually has focused on symbols. The Confederate flag flying on the grounds of the state capitol in Columbia, South Carolina. Issues of streets named for Confederate heroes. Statues, parks, school mascots, other institutions. In Kentucky, the Jefferson Davis statue inside the Capitol building. What do these symbols mean, and how do they fit into this conversation? Are we going down, you know, a side path, or is this at the core of the discussion we need to be having? Dr. Jimmy Kirby looks like he's ready to respond to that question.
Well, I mean, I think there are certainly some symbols in our society that are very divisive to certain segments of society. And I think we need to have serious dialogue and conversation about those particular symbols. When you think of the flag, for example, I mean, that's a symbol for African Americans that represent hatred, discrimination, and racism. So I think we need to talk seriously and discuss seriously about symbols that divide segments of our society.
You think we're going somewhere with this conversation that's now started, and that in South Carolina they're likely to remove it and put the flag in a museum, take it away from the state capitol?
I think we are moving in that direction. It's just unfortunate that innocent black lives had to be lost in order for us to get to this point.
How do you all respond to those who say, you know, they have that license plate on the front of the car with the Confederate flag, or they display the Confederate flag in their home as a matter of sentimentality or just respect for principles that they see as non-racist whatsoever, but just a kind of a sentimentality for the. I'm not quite sure how one would explain the Civil War without the slavery component.
Well, I mean, I think they have the freedom, certainly in this country, to do that as far as on their cars and in their homes. But it's when it's made public that the problem arises, I think.
Perhaps that's when some of the honest conversation can occur, when you ask folks, do they recognize what that stands for? Because without a doubt, those symbols of flags and statues were used to display specifically to fly in the face of equality and dignity and inclusion of the African-American community. And I say this because I've seen the debates, as everyone else has in the past few days. Let's let the history books or history museums display what we were, hopefully to teach the progression of changed hearts and changed minds. And let's let our flags and our statues that are in our public buildings, let's let those things honor folks and commemorate and celebrate those issues where we are now, where we hope to be. I just think we need to ascribe to become a nation unified, not in spite of our God-given diversity and uniqueness, but because of those diversities and uniqueness and an understanding of one another and what those symbols really mean. And let's just call it what it is.
Our email address, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Our phone number, 800-621-8890. And on the line right now, we have Deborah from Lexington. Deborah, thank you for calling and being part of our conversation. Go right ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for hosting the show. As a white person, I think it's really important that my comment is that we have to step up. White people have to step up and find ways every day to fight racism. And, you know, there have been a lot of discussion here about dialogue, education. I totally agree. but I think that it's really important that the white people need to learn about the history of racial oppression in America, and it's a big step that can help many people of color to start trusting white people. And I think there's a lot of reasons why people of color should not trust white people. But I also think that there's a need for extensive education in these American classrooms, and not only the churches and the synagogues and the mosques, but I think we have to hit all areas to do this. So that's really my comment. Thank you.
All right, Deborah, thank you for your call to 800-621-8890. Hearing Deborah's comment, I'm thinking of Black History Month. February every year, and the effort to educate on Black history and race, folks. Is that enough? Is that even worth continuing as a way to help overcome racism in this country?
Well, I would like to hear Dr. Kirby's comment on this, but Black history is part of American history. I was noticing Marsha's response to that, where she was saying it's not enough. I mean, Dr. Kirby is right that education is a critical component to this, and that when we teach history, we need to teach it in the context of Blacks being just part of the American fabric and part of American history, you know, back pre-Revolutionary War all the way to today, and the contributions that Black Americans made in the context of what white Americans made to the progress in this country. It just needs to be just interwoven within the American historical context and not seen as, well, here's what Black folks did in February, and then here's what America did for the other 11 months.
I really can't add to that. I totally agree. I think this type of education should be ongoing in our school systems, in our colleges, and not just 1 month of the year, as some people would say, the shortest month of the year. But it should be ongoing, and it should be a part of education, period.
I was shaking my head because in churches so often what happens, at least in the Christian tradition, is that we sing African-American songs on Martin Luther King weekend. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's it's appropriate to sing them then, perhaps, but why not sing them in June or July or August and September, whenever?
The Charleston church shooting, racism in America, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. You can write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, but we would encourage you to do so quickly. We're live on Thursday morning here for another 20 minutes. Better yet, pick up the phone and give us a call at 800-621-8890. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or call us and be part of the conversation, 800-621-8890.
There is a balm in Gilead to make a wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal a sin-sick soul.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, the Charleston church shootings. Racism in America, our topic on this week's program. You're welcome to be part of the conversation. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com or give us a call, 800-621-8890. Before we go to another caller on the telephone line, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles is with us. And by way of disclaimer, I'm a member of Pastor Marsha's church. And Pastor Marsha's sermon this past Sunday is one of the reasons we're doing this show. We were going to run a repeat program because it's the middle of summer and things are kind of slow, but obviously not. And one of the things, Marsha, you said during your sermon, you referred to the folks at the church in Charleston, Emmanuel AME Church. You referred to their continuing to welcome visitors to their church. Let's talk a little bit about that. When we talk about Christian principles and faith, that to me is like at the core of a faith principle. If the folks in that church, for instance, this past Sunday when they reopened the doors and had a worship service, if they would welcome me or another white person that they'd never seen before to their congregation, that says something.
I can only imagine the fear and anxiety that they would have to have that occur. But yet they set, to me, an amazing example and witness for us. And, you know, Reverend William Barber of the North Carolina NAACP has a quote that I really love. And he said, "Peace with God produces a quarrel with the world." And I think that's, in fact, very true, that these things that are going on in our world, the destruction and the hate-filled messages that are heard, we in faith communities are called to have a radical welcome. And for me as a spiritual leader, I find that in Christian scripture in Old and New Testament, that at the heart of every message, it was the message of radical welcome and radical hospitality. And that's hard work.
And in the situation of Charleston, it also led to the deaths of 9 people, that openness and that radical hospitality.
Certainly it did. And in our particular church, we are racially diverse. We also are affirming of LGBT leadership and participation in marriage. And we had 2 oppressed groups very fearful of one another until we sat down and we did have that dialogue. But then we took further action with one another. And we have talked about how our little church could become a target for folks who don't appreciate our stances on various issues. And certainly there have been fear from folks to say perhaps we should lock our doors. And our response has been, we can't because they didn't.
Let's talk with Jackie from Lexington, who is on the line. Jackie, thank you for calling Eastern Standard. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I have a comment. One of the things I would like to see in the religious community here in Lexington is an exchange of guest ministers, where like a minister from an African-American minister could go to a predominantly white church and actually give a sermon there, and then vice versa. When I was younger, in my church at that time, Central America was very much in the news with El Salvador, Nicaragua. And one of the things that we did was we brought up a minister from that region, and he stayed with our church for about 2 or 3 weeks and actually, you know, gave presentations and actually gave a sermon for 2 weeks so that we could ask him questions and we could learn from him about, you know, the culture and what was going on down there politically. And I'd like to see, you know, like sister churches exchanging ministers and, you know, learning and growing from one another that way. And anyway, that was just an idea I had and just wanted to share with people.
Jackie, thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to Jackie's comment. First, let me go back quickly to Marsha's point. I completely agree with Pastor Marsha. You cannot close your doors, because if you close your doors in fear of strangers, you might be closing your doors to Christ as well. If you read the Bible, the Bible talks about how Jesus may come to you as a stranger. So I completely agree with you, Pastor Marsha, in that context. As for Jackie's point, I also agree with her, but I would just add one thing. Rather than having a guest pastor come and preach, why not invite the entire congregation? Yeah. If we all agree that the 11 a.m. is the most segregated hour, then just having a pastor come is not enough. There needs to be more interchange of congregations, black and white, you know, Hispanic and non-Hispanic, again, Catholics and Protestants, you know, worshiping together. So I think Jackie, I would agree with her point, but I would go further and say it should be an exchange of congregations as well.
Thank you, Jackie, for calling. Our phone number, 800-621-8890, a line open for you. We're talking the Charleston church shooting and racism in America and in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Do we have racism in Kentucky? What do we need to do about that? What are your ideas about how to overcome racism? I think that it's one of those topics where it's not like we can't have a rational discussion about whether we need to get rid of racism. I think we all pretty much agree that racism is an issue. Or is that the case? And certainly feel free to call if you'd like to discuss that with us at 800-621-8890. We talked about the Confederate flag and the symbols of the Confederacy. One of the other hot buttons that this issue raises, and I know President Obama has tiptoed around it, I believe. I believe candidate Hillary Clinton made a statement the other day about gun control. And politicians are Senator Thomas, for lack of a better term, tend to run away from that issue, tend to run away from that topic. Why are politicians afraid to address the issue of gun control?
Well, quite succinctly, because the gun lobby is a very powerful lobby. To directly answer your question, I do think that at a minimum, we ought to do two things, John. I would be the first to say that I'm not anti-gun, but I do think that we need two critical pieces to enhance our gun regulation. One, John, we have to have background checks. I mean, to be able to buy a gun without background checks, I think is ludicrous, and I would say that. We ought to know whether the person has a violent history. We ought to know whether the person has some kind of felony record. We ought to know whether the person has some kind of psychological or mental instability. You know, people just cannot be allowed to come in and buy a gun in stores or gun shows or gun fairs or wherever without some kind of background check. We need that. Secondly, John, and I've advocated this as well, I understand guns as a sport. You know, I grew up in a family of guns. You know, my brother-in-law is an avid hunter. I've been around guns all of my life. But to have these AK-47 assault weapons and these weapons that can shoot multiple rounds in a matter of seconds, I just don't see why we need those on the street. You know, I am for banning these military-style weapons that are used for war, you know, just to be able to carry around on the streets of society. I just don't see why we need that in everyday society. So that's where I come from.
Dr. Jimmy Kirby, am I correct that we would describe Martin Luther King Jr. as a pacifist? Where would he come down on something as an issue such as gun control or the violent reaction against racism and hate?
Martin Luther King Jr. was certainly a pacifist to a certain extent. He did, however, agree with taking out Hitler, for example. But as far as guns, no. At one point, particularly in Montgomery, when during the Montgomery bus boycott, initially King actually went to purchase a gun, and some of his inner circle sort of pulled his coat and said, "You can't be talking nonviolent and carrying a gun yourself." So he relinquished that, and until his death, he was totally nonviolent. I wouldn't consider him a total pacifist, however. But we need to really study King toward the end of his life, particularly the last 3 years of his life. It was a totally different King than the King that delivered the I Have a Dream speech in 1963. And it seems to me that the latter King is the King we don't really want to talk about. But he was a much different King. I mean, he was moving not toward violence, but he was moving toward civil disobedience, which we don't seem to know that about King. The march, for example, that he was planning on Washington right before his death, King said this is not going to be a picnic like 1963. His plan was to march thousands of people in waves into many of the government buildings there in Washington and disrupt the function of government. And many of his inner circle thought King was losing his mind. I mean, so this was a totally different King. And King was, he combined what he called the three evils, militarism, materialism, and racism. And he felt that these three evils had to be rooted out of American society in order for what he called the beloved community. And for him, the beloved community was equivalent to the traditional kingdom of God. He felt that the kingdom of God could be established here on earth as many of the early social gospel movement.
Putting you on the spot here, but in asking you to kind of speak for Martin Luther King Jr. The shooting in Charleston, how do you think that he would respond to that situation? What would be the wisdom that he would share with us over that situation and how to move forward?
Well, I think King would be elated that no additional violence broke out because of that. So he would be very proud of African Americans for that reason. Because normally in situations like that, cities go up in flames. But in this instance, there was no violence. And so I think King would be very proud of African Americans for that. I think for King, because he preached the sermon for a couple of the young girls that were killed in Birmingham in the church bombing. And one of the things that he said was that, and he believed, was that unmerited suffering is redemptive. So he would probably say some good can probably come out of this. And that would be sort of hard for some of us to swallow. But he would stick to some good can come out of this. Unmerited suffering is redemptive.
What good is going to come out of the Charleston shooting? Where are we going to go from here to deal with racism in America? In our final few minutes of our program, our guests, Dr. Jimmy Kirby, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles, Senator Reggie Thomas. Pastor Marsha, what good can come out of this horrible situation?
Well, as I shared with our congregation on Sunday, what good might come out of it is up to us. It's up to us to decide if we're just going to leave it at dialogue or if we are actually going to be active, whether it be continued and more active dialogue, whether it be action of the systemic issues that we want to ignore, whether that's relative to crime and incarceration and the differences in inequities, I would say, of the African-American community versus the white community. Are we really going to get serious about those systemic issues and call one another and call those of privilege and power to do something about it? So I think it's up to us.
Senator.
Oh, I agree with Pastor Marsha. I'm really hoping, Pastor Marsha, for some action, though. I mean, I think getting rid of the symbols is a good first step. I think Dr. Kirby is right. What the symbols are a powerful message, you know, that supports such instances as support for a slave-based economy, which is what the Confederate flag represents, as support for differentiating black people from white people. So I think getting rid of these state-sanctioned symbols is a good first step. But you have to go beyond that. You have to look at issues of education and how, you know, we still have black children in the state getting a lesser education than white children. You have to look at unemployment and how the percentage of unemployment among black communities is significantly higher than white communities. You got to look at opportunities and saying, are blacks getting the same opportunities as whites? So I'm really hoping, Pastor Marsha, that this does lead to action, because we certainly need action if we're really going to completely address racism here in America.
As a member of the General Assembly, are you hearing anything about the Jefferson Davis statue? And is there a role? Are the legislators going to have to take action to do something about that statue in the state capitol? As the most prominent symbol in Kentucky at the moment.
Well, I think Governor Beshear's taken the proper step. He has said he's asked the Historic Buildings Commissions to examine this. They have the authority to do so. They are meeting as we speak. I believe, given the call from both parties' leadership, that this must come down, I think we will see the Historic Buildings Commission listen to that and remove it from the Capitol Rotunda to its proper place in some historical museum. But again, John, going back to my point earlier that has been raised by both Dr. Kirby and Pastor Marsha, this has to go beyond symbolism and deal with some of the systemic root causes that we see every day in our society that tell us that blacks do not still have the same opportunities as whites.
Let me very quickly acknowledge an email from Justin, who has written to us. And Justin says, I hate what happened at the church at Charleston. And I agree that education will be the tool of change. What I think is most important, however, is the delivery of information in schools. At the verge of sounding racist myself, please hear me out. During Black History Month, my daughter enjoyed an interpretive play about Harriet Tubman. What was left out was the white families who risked their lives and homes and families to help slaves find freedom. Also, most history lessons don't focus on the thousands of white men from the North and South who gave their lives in the Civil War for the abolishment of slavery. If the focus of certain historical facts being taught are purely Afrocentric, then a lot of young whites feel left out being able to connect to American history. If we teach history in a way that focuses on we did this together with a sense of pride on a humanitarian level, maybe perception may change. Comments reaction to Justin's comment. Dr. Jimmy Kirby, actually, I'm going to ask you to take us forward with a final comment about where we can head from here in terms of eradicating racism as well.
Well, I still say that it's about education in our churches and in our schools. And particularly, I see that we need it even in our African-American churches. I did a workshop in Canton, Ohio, not long ago, dealing with the Black religious experience. And I was very surprised that many of our African-American Christians do not know their religious heritage at all and where we came from or anything about our ancestors. So it's not just educating whites, but we also must educate ourselves.
And we're going to allow your comments to be the last word in today's discussion on the Charleston church shooting and racism in America and the Commonwealth. Thank you to our guests, to Senator Reggie Thomas, to Dr. Jimmy Kirby, Pastor Marsha Morris Charles, for being with us for this week's Eastern Standard. I hope that we've at least been able to begin some of the honest discussion that needs to happen about race in this country. This program is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Noah Day helped with producing this week's show and had assistance from Brian Burkhart. Our technical director is Brian Bartlett. Julie Tennell has been on the phones. A reminder, the show is available for online listening and downloading as a podcast later today, usually within an hour after the show by about 1 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. It will also repeat on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock on the WEKU stations. We're interested in your questions or comments, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in for Eastern Standard.